welcome back to Alphabet Scoop. This is episode 19, and it's been a couple weeks since we had a show. We haven't really been super regular over the last few weeks for a variety of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
I just got back from handling some or being with my family for some, you know, family matters. And then I had a vacation a few weeks ago, and so it's been a little bit hard. But we're back. We're back, and we're going to talk a little bit today about Android Pi, which was released finally this week. Pixel 3, maybe some Galaxy Note 9 stuff. Before we jump in, I just wanted to introduce everyone once again to our Abner Lee. How's it going, man?
Hey, going well.
Good. Glad to hear it. Hopefully better than it's been going for me lately, but we won't get into that. First up, we have Android Pi. So as I mentioned, Google launched Android 9 Pi this week, and it's rolling out now, or has pretty much already rolled out, to the Google Pixel and the Pixel 2, but also the Essential phone. And I guess that's notable since Essential was the very first OEM to ever launch an Android release on their phone on the same day as Google.
Which is a bit sad if you think about it. It's such a low bar to to strive for.
Yeah, yeah. I saw a lot of different takes on that. A lot of people were super stoked and super impressed with Essential, you know, because it is, I mean, it's a first.
Yeah, it is a first.
But at the same time, it's kind of like, you know, Android's been around for a decade now. You'd think that we would have fixed this.
Yeah,
we would have fixed it sooner.
This is the 10-year mark, Android 9, which is, the name by itself is interesting because it's Android 9, not Android 9.0. It's a change from previous years and definitely last year. So Android 9, it's, as you mentioned before, it looks a bit like iOS's naming schema, but it's a minor change.
Yeah, I don't really know what the thinking is behind that because, you know, all these marketing decisions are certainly intentional. You know, they're not just doing this for no reason. But it is interesting, and I think, as you mentioned, like iOS has, I think since iOS made this change, I think around 2.0. I think 2.0 they called it 2.0, and then iOS 3 or 4. It was one of those, I think, where they stopped doing the 0.0, and just called it iOS 4 or 5, 6. And Android stuck with it for a while. And, you know, anyone watching this show probably knows that Android hasn't always been on an annual cadence of full number releases. Whereas iOS has. iOS has pretty much been annual, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4. And only for the last 5 years or so has Android been consistently like, you know, 8.0, 9.0, you know. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I don't know what the thinking is behind that, but I still haven't gotten used to it. Have you?
No, not at all. It just visually looks weird. And I think that might have something to do with how current naming, so Android usually has one, I think they call it a maintenance release, which is like 8.1, 7.1. They always only go up to 0.1, sometimes 0.1, 0.2 or something. But it never goes compared to iOS, where it's like, I think we're on 11.4 right now or something like that.
Right.
Because it never, that 0.1 update never really makes any sense because it's just one update. So maybe we're going to see a whole new a naming scheme later this fall when everything launches. Or maybe they won't even call it 9.1. Who knows what they're going to do there. But like maybe for the public, it's not going to be a visible change.
Yeah. I think particularly for us, it's hard to, you know, it's hard to get used to because you and I have, you know, 4 or 5 years or whatever of, you know, writing articles and using our, you know, categories in WordPress or whatever. And it's always been, you know, like, you know, we especially have the familiarity with the old naming scheme. And so, you know, maybe for most people it's not as jarring. The other thing though is besides the nine thing, pi. So
yes,
you know, we finally know the tasty treat for the year, and it was definitely not as much of an event, and there wasn't nearly as much fanfare as there was with last year's Oreo. Although last year's Oreo announcement was definitely out of the ordinary.
Yeah. So I know I was talking with our colleague Ben Schoen, and he and I both agreed that the best P name was Popsicle, not Pi. But from reading Google's official PR, it seems like they chose Pi because they wanted to do, say, like, it's easy as Pi and various other cutesy lines.
Yeah, that pie, definitely, right? Opens them up to more little slogans that they can use. Another thing was that people were quick to jump on Twitter and ask me, "Hey, wasn't the first developer preview released on Pi Day?" And unfortunately, it wasn't. Although that would have been really cool. Mm. That's another reason I think that they kind of had to go with Pi, because, you know, the mathematical connotation.
I agree.
If there was any name that has probably been decided on since the beginning, it was the P name, probably. Although it is short and it's one syllable, and so we're used to, you know, nougat, lollipop, you know, we're used to 2-3 syllable words. Oreo, that's 3, and pie is 1. So, and it's
short.
Kind of like nine. It's a little bit jarring for those of us that say these kinds of things every single day. Obviously the general population probably doesn't care at all, but you know, this is definitely inside baseball.
Yeah.
For Android. Inside baseball. Yeah. Digital well-being. So tell us about that.
Yep. So alongside the launch of Android 9 Pi, Google announced a beta of digital well-being for the Pixel and Pixel 2. It's officially coming this fall, which Google said back at I/O, but this beta is a total surprise. I think most of us thought that it would be launching alongside the... Well, it could still be launching alongside the next Pixel, but I get none of us expected this beta to come out so soon.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I just got it today, actually, because I guess I didn't catch that it was an open beta. So I had put in, you know, when the first thing opened, I put in my email address and I was checking the Play Store like every day waiting for it to pop up. But then I just, you know, found out today that it was public, and I just obviously signed up and got it. But it's, I don't know about you, but I'm kind of like, maybe it's just an impression thing, but like I kind of got the impression that there was going to be more to this at I/O.
Yes.
And it seems a little bit bare bones compared to what I was expecting. Yeah. Although I don't know if their facts really back up those feelings.
No, yeah. There's so especially in Wind Down, which is their features to help you get to bed, it's basically an advanced do not disturb. The features aren't completely there yet. On Monday, Google showed screenshots which are way more developed. It has nice animations, nice graphics. There's this one tiny detail that shows you if you set these hours, how much sleep you're going to get. So I think once it launches, it's going to be very user-friendly and whimsical. And I think it's a beta. They're labeling it a beta. They're calling it a beta, and it's very clearly a beta. It's bare bones right now. I can definitely make it bug out. One amusing thing is how it doesn't seem to recognize videos in PIP, picture in picture. So if you do break out a YouTube in PIP, it does not count against if you set a limit. So that's like, it's buggy. You can clearly break this.
You're so addicted to your phone that you're finding all the loopholes.
Oh, definitely. Just blinking it left, right, and center.
Actually, that's another thing I've been wanting to talk about is that digital well-being is, and this is not just, you know, Google, this kind of applies across the spectrum with all these initiatives, But we are uniquely positioned, I think, to be completely unable to test these features.
No, we are not.
Exactly. Go ahead.
My particular poison is that I'm switching between so many phones that I can't get a clear set.
Right.
I just have to use different phones to like for the work. And maybe this weekend I'm going to like commit to using my main phone and see whether I can get like a good idea of how many notifications I'm doing on my getting on my downtime. But otherwise, no. This unless it syncs, which is going to like be a whole host of issues, repeated notification counts and whatnot, I can't use this.
Right. And that's one thing, you know, having, you know, various devices. And I talked about that on Alphabet Scoop a couple of weeks ago, is I was hoping talking about how I'm hoping to see kind of a unified platform of some kind so that I can track, you know, digital well-being data across all my devices at the same time. That's one aspect. Another thing is that it's our jobs to use our phones. And so it's not exactly helpful to use features that are that are helping us keep off our phones, especially, you know, not during our work day. And so I had this idea, you know, my vacation was a few weeks ago, but whoever's vacation is next, we need to make it, you know, their assignment that they use digital well-being for the week, because that's when, you know, that's when they'll actually have an opportunity to track their usage, you know, because the data that we're getting is like almost useless. It's like, oh, you've been on your phone, you know, 12 hours today or something. It's like, I don't want to be on my phone less than that, because I have to be on my phone, you know?
Yeah.
So it's tough.
I think the inherent flaw in digital well-being and how it's implemented on Android is that we live in a multi-device world. So the way YouTube is doing it, it's more of a server-side implementation, which using your watch history to calculate watch time. But and I think all of Google services might need to switch to that model to have Gmail be the one that counts how many emails you're getting, how many notifications are being sent out, because Android does not have the problem of people who use tablets, for one thing, good or bad. But I don't know, Chrome OS services, everybody uses a desktop and logs into Gmail. There has to be a better way to do a cloud-based way to do this.
Yeah, definitely. I think we mentioned that a couple weeks ago. At least for Google's first-party apps, it should be pretty easy for Google to just track your usage. I mean, if you're using Gmail on an iPad, like Google should easily be able to just track how much time you're using. Although that expands the conversation into, you know, how much data do we want Google to have on us? Which I mean, I think those kind of metrics they already have. So they might as well let us benefit from them, right?
Useful. That is always the trade-off with giving them so much data.
Right. And then the other thing is you know, with this, at least, it would be limited to Google's apps, you know, unless Google did something like some kind of digital being API where, you know, they let third parties... I don't know. That kind of gets complicated, because third parties would implement the API, and all the third parties would be tracking every single moment that every single user is using their apps, and then giving that data to Google, which no company would probably want to do.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's tough. I don't really see any easy solutions, unless you. I think the only real solution would be, you know, if you're a loyal platform, you know, like loyal to Google's like platforms, and you have digital well-being, if they launch digital well-being in Chrome OS, like, you know, using your Pixel Book and using your Pixel phone, and, you know, maybe they could even track time that you're interacting with your Google Home or, you know, other devices, your Pixel Slate or your smart display, you know, they could track all those things across all of Google's products. But like you said, we live in a multi-device world that, you know, no one is that religious about their products, I don't think. Especially not, you know, the average person.
And I just remembered Wear OS notifications that you get on Wear OS.
I forgot Wear OS existed.
Well, who hasn't? Bad thoughts, very bad thoughts. But yeah, it's you've used it. I believe you're on the iOS 12 beta, right?
I haven't really had that much time to really dig into it. One of the things I think is great about Google's implementation of this stuff is that they're doing the, you know, grayscale thing with what do they call it? They call it wind down.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, the grayscale, I mean, there's already, you know, I think we published an app when this was starting to become a trend because people were doing it with their iPhones.
Yes.
I don't know if maybe, you know, do you know if the digital well-being stuff on the iPhone does grayscale after a certain amount of time? Okay.
I didn't think so. The pro screen that tints the color.
Okay. Right. But they don't do grayscale.
No, they don't.
Which, I mean, the whole grayscale trend thing, I think, started on the iPhone. I think people, I don't know. So
it's so much more easily accessible on any iPhone versus at least on the Pixel, which requires you enabling developer options.
Right. Whereas it's on the iPhone, it's just one of the standard accessibility settings.
Yep.
But yeah, I think that's a really smart use of, I mean, I think it was great of Google to see that, you know, trend of like people are using this, you know, it's one of those cool things where it's like, that's not what that feature was intended for. That's not what that accessibility feature was intended for. And there's a lot of accessibility features that are not intended on the iPhone for what people use them for.
Yeah.
I forgot. You know, I don't want to talk about it, but I think it was really smart of Google to notice that and implement it. And that is one thing, you know, as a blogger, I said that, you know, a lot of this data, like the, you know, the screen time data is not really that useful for us because we're using our phones all day regardless. But the wind down stuff, I do see myself using it, and so I'll use it. Have you been using it for? Have you had wind down turned on for the last week or so?
So my very weird thing is, before I go to bed, I read usually the web, so I just inverse colors. That's like my poison. I don't have the option yet. No. And I think it's still a bit bright for me because I inverse colors to just like, or Google could just release a dark theme everywhere. That's also what they could do. 9.1 maybe? Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
But so you're mentioning briefly about how it was good for Google to recognize that developer option and make it more accessible. So just to wrap up digital well-being, in my hands-on, I concluded that digital well-being is nothing new. It just centralizes so many settings that are usually buried in like five different menus, because like do not disturb is one thing. It's its own menu. Then like night light, which tints your screen number throughout the night. And then like we said, a grayscale was in, you have to enable developer options. So I think the very clever thing Google is doing with digital well-being is just putting everything together in a way that's friendly for users. And this is the trend that Google is moving to be more user-friendly, to be more delightful, to provide more insights and that kind of thing. So yeah. I think digital well-being has a very good future, despite the flaws, these pro user flaws that we picked up on. But
yeah, and they're making it pretty. Yeah, and they're making it pretty accessible through, you know, the settings app. And on that note, a lot of people have complained about, you know, not being able to, or not liking that you have to go digging for digital being.
It's a pain. Because
they want to have that data more readily available. And Chris Lacey, the guy behind Action Launcher, he actually released an app today called Pixel Shortcuts, which lets you put the digital well-being. So like digital well-being is downloaded via the Play Store, but it's one of those rare apps, kind of like launchers, that doesn't actually have an app icon, at least not yet. Maybe Google will change their mind on that one, especially since this is something that he put together so quickly because so many people wanted it. But it basically lets you just add a digital well-being shortcut to your app drawer or your home screen. And it's pretty easy to use. You just download the app and you click on a toggle, and then, you know, you've got a permanent app icon. And then there's another, I mean, even more helpful is that there's another option in that app for adding a shortcut directly to the dashboard. So within digital well-being, you can, you know, you open it up and you have all the options for wind down and managing notifications and stuff. And then if you click on dashboard, it lets you basically drill down into your usage on different apps. And so there's a shortcut for that too. So, you know, that's really helpful. And, you know, if you were one of the many people that were, you know, was hoping that Google would put an app icon with digital well-being, then you can just download that free app and give that a shot.
Well, what it's worth, I feel like digital well-being should be a quick tile in quick settings. I just checked, not there. I think it'd be a useful addition
in the media
access as a quick setting tile.
Yeah, maybe. Or, I mean, I guess the counter argument for that would be most quick setting toggles are toggles, whereas you know, they're toggles, not shortcuts. Which
that's true. Yes, that is a good point.
I guess that's the. I guess next up. I pretty much rounds out digital being, I think. We'll spend more time with it, and hopefully
it'll get better over time.
Yeah, it'll get better over time. We'll spend more time with it, and maybe around the time the Pixel 3 launches, it'll be fully fleshed out. And speaking of Pixel 3, this is probably like our fifth episode of Alphabet Scoop, where we've talked about Pixel 3 leaks. Interestingly enough, the small Pixel 3 has been like AWOL. Like, we have not seen it anywhere. It's like hardly leaked. And the Pixel 3 XL, on the other hand, has once again this week leaked out, showing pretty much everything. I don't think there's hardly anything about the Pixel 3 XL that we don't know for sure at this point. We have almost all of its specs, I think. You know, there's a lot of things you can just assume, like its processor and
the RAM is a bit disappointing, though. Just 4 gigs.
Yeah, based on what we know. And, you know, that is... And it's disappointing. But at the same time, you know, iPhones tend to go conservative on RAM, too.
Yeah. So, and this is a reflective of Google's stance. That's that the software can...
Right. Optimizing its software is more important. Yes. And, so this week's leak was... You know, we basically
retail
saw
the box.
Yeah, we saw the retail box. And
Pixel
we saw
style
these
USB-C headphones.
Exactly.
Super.
And for those that don't remember, last year there was actually a retail box. I think it was like a carrier version or a Canadian version or something.
Yeah.
Of the Pixel 2 that had, you know, like a little cutout for included wired Pixel buds. And that didn't happen, obviously. And now it looks like it is happening, or at least maybe in other countries, because I think there are some countries that. It's actually it's legislated that they're acquired. So who knows what will happen in the States, but it looks like they're happening. It's happening somewhere. And then another thing is today, another video leaked out showing some, like a Geekbench or something, showing some specs, supposed specs. And this Geekbench showed a 6.7 inch display.
I think that's wrong. I definitely think that's wrong.
Yeah, because that would be... That just seems so
maybe
wrong to me.
Maybe the notches are throwing off the Geekbench app or whatever, because 6.7 is the size of a Nexus 7. Like, that was... It's not that big. Those notches don't look that big.
You can just... You know, it's like a banana for scale situation. You know, it's just like hold a banana next to it, and you can see that it's not a 6.7 inch display.
Yeah, so that's it can't be that. Maybe that seems improbable.
Another thing that you heard about recently was Pixel Stand. So why don't you talk a little bit about that?
So in a recent Google app APK insight. We spotted a line of code referencing a Pixel Stand. So for the past, even further than that, we've heard of something called Dreamliner, which is a code name for what it seems to be a code name for wireless chargers supported natively by Android P and with each OEMs and third-party manufacturers able to make their own, and Android will by default support it. From like the always on display showing the battery charging status and just like other deeper integration that's never been found in Android before. So this Pixel Stand appears to be the version that Google is launching alongside the Pixel 3 this upcoming year, which hints at wireless charging via maybe a glass rear back. So that's something that you have definitely been asking for with these next generation phones.
Yeah, I can't really imagine anything that a Pixel Stand could be other than like a wireless charger. I mean, we'll get to Samsung later in the show, but the Note 9 event, they announced the, you know, stand side-by-side, you know, Galaxy Watch, Galaxy Note 9 stand, basically. And I think that's something that Google would like to make. I guess another thing is, I think we've seen these kind of stands, like third parties have been making stands for a while, you know, wireless charging stands. But I think, I don't know, like looking at the bigger picture, I feel like stands for phones are going to become a more important thing in the next like few years. We've talked about this a little bit on the show, I think, about like, you know, the potential long term of, you know, phones no longer having headphone jacks. And well, we know most, a lot of phones don't have headphone jacks anymore, but or USB-C ports or whatever port, you know, they have. If we have a completely portless phone, I think we could see phones start shipping with little stands. And so I think that maybe some of these companies are seeing that stands might be, you know, more important as we get closer and closer to the prototypical glass slab, you know, phone design with no bezels and no anything, no IO. And so I think I can't imagine anything that a Pixel Stand would be other than a wireless charging stand. And I think it's really weird that they let this slip.
Yeah.
Like usually there haven't been that many big leaks come via the Google app since maybe the first evidences. I think the first evidences of the assistant headphones, which was, what was the code name?
Bisto.
Bisto. Yeah. I remember when that came out, I was like, that was such a cool thing to find because, you know, definitely.
And they ended up listed a long time out.
Yeah, they ended up sucking, but
that was just a peak in my life, which I was very excited when for every reference of Bisto and when it came out.
Yeah.
So,
but Bisto, for those that don't remember, it was listed in the Google app alongside the other platforms. So it was like Android, Android TV, Android Wear, and then it was like Bisto. So we knew it had to be
a new device type.
Device type or platform. And, you know, there's, you know, wild speculation between ourselves of like, maybe this is the return of glass or something crazy like that. But yeah, obviously it ended up being headphones. As we learned, I think in the weeks prior to the actual launch of the Bose QC35 2s. So that's Pixel Stand. I'm excited for it. I'm just basing this off of, one, we've seen these Dreamletter references. Two, contrary to like a lot of people that I'm seeing talk about this, I think that the back of the Pixel 3 XL is glass. And I think it's most obvious in the most recent leak photos that we've shared on 9to5 Google, where you can see how it's different on the back. So like,
yeah,
the Pixel, you can see how where the glass meets the supposed not glass. You can see where it meets there, how it's on the Pixel 2 XL, it's a very clear seam. You know, it's like it's like a seam where it's like, this is the glass and this is where it meets the metal.
Yeah.
And on the Pixel 3 XL photos, I mean, maybe one day I'll learn how to use Hangouts better and I'll be able to bring up photos in the middle of our podcast. But it looks to me like the entire thing is glass and the back where it's like, no, not shiny glass, is like a frosted coating cover or frosted different kind of glass or something. It looks like it's an all glass back to me.
It's shiny in a way that is such a complete opposite of the Pixel 2 XL, because Google made a big deal with the Pixel 2 that they plastic coated this metal rear, and now they're going in the complete other direction.
Yeah, another thing to note here, this is very inside baseball, I think, but Matias Duarte at Google I.O., we went to, or I went to, a little briefing about, you know, Material theme and everything they're doing with the new Material, or the Google Material theme. And Matias Duarte mentioned that we might see like little flares or little pieces of inspiration in hardware come from the design direction that they're going with Material theme. And to me, this like frosted section on the back, it meets the shiny section with this like wide curved radius. And that radius to me looks very similar to the radius of the curved UI that we're seeing in Google Material theme now. For instance, like the notification shade in Android Pie. It's everywhere, but that's just one example.
That is so whimsical if they follow through with that. That is exciting.
Yeah, he talked about how it's, you know, the design approach is not just software. It's going to be, you know, it's all the teams working together to create, you know, an image, a design language that's very Google, and it will apply across hardware and software. And it'll be interesting to see how that applies to other hardware. But it looks like that's kind of happening already with the Pixel 3 XL. And another thing to note that kind of proves that it's all glass, maybe not prove, but you can see in the latest images how the top glass shade, the shade goes down around the edges. Mm-hmm. And it seems like the glass continues all the way down the sides. At least that's mm-hmm. what it looks like to me. You know, we won't know until the phone launches, whenever it launches. But yeah, to me, like, I guess the point I was getting at is I think the evidence is pretty conclusive that this thing has an all glass back, which would be supportive of the, you know, idea that it will be wireless charging, which we've seen evidence of in the code. So all things considered, that with the Pixel stand, it seems like all but certain to me that the Pixel 3 XL will be wireless charging. And I guess the other thing is that every phone nowadays is wireless charging, and you know, Android and Google were kind of pioneers with wireless charging, you know, years and years before Apple ever did it with the iPhone. But now it seems like the trend is finally caught up, and I think Google would look silly not to have wireless charging. Especially now that Qi won the charging wars, which we've also talked about many times. Anything else on Pixel 3? Let's see.
So on the software front, we're apparently going to get custom wallpapers and the always on display. It's mm-hmm. interesting.
Yeah.
That might be delightful. Honestly, from the software experience, it's not too different from what we have now on the Pixel 2. I saw that the squeeze gestures were still in the settings app, squeeze mm-hmm. for assistant. Honestly, from that leak, maybe Google has something else in the latest software builds, but I haven't seen anything new from those leaks yet compared to
another thing. We learned for almost certain, I mean, assuming this build that this leaked phone is running is relatively new, we know for a fact now, I mean, Bloomberg already reported this back when they did their Pixel 3 scoop right after those first screen protectors, whatever, launched. But they said that Google was planning to go the same route as the iPhone and, you know, embrace the notch and not, you know, not hide it with software. And, you know, now we have a firsthand account that's the case. So that's one thing which I'm kind of disappointed by, because the notch is ugly as hell. I'm not strongly against notches.
It just depends on how you do it.
I tweet about it all the time. I really think notches are really not a big deal, but it's how they did it. Like you said, it's like, it seems like so low effort.
Yeah.
Like the huge chin, huge notch, yeah, like biggest notch we've ever seen.
That second camera better do something like wild.
It better be magic.
I hope it's like the best facial recognition known to consumer technology. I hope it's like a Minority Report. I hope it's like, bam, it unlock.
Yeah.
Imagine if it were... The iPhone X does like raise to wake, right? Like something like that. Imagine if you could just do that with this. An always on camera, per se. And when you just bring it up to your face, recognizes, unlocks. I don't know. I hope they're doing something cool is the end note of that.
Unfortunately, our tipster said that he's not aware or they're not aware of anything special. they mentioned that they're primarily focused on making that thing pump out really, really, really good portrait selfies. Which would, if they're aiming
for the iPhone,
which exactly, like this is like the marketing message being like the Pixel 3 XL has really bomb portrait selfies is like such a thing that Google would do with the Pixel line. You know, it's like, that's the kind of thing that like will seriously piss off every like longstanding Nexus or Android fan in the world, you know, because that's something that I feel like the hardcore base just not care about at all. You know, that, I mean, the notch thing I feel like is totally a non-issue to most people, and yet the hardcore base is like so opposed to it. The headphone jack, I think the iPhone X being like one of the best-selling iPhones of all time proves that the headphone jack is like mostly a non-issue to most people.
Yeah. And honestly, them shipping if they do ship USB-C Pixel Buds everywhere, that's good on them. It gives people headphones. We always need more headphones.
But really, really good portrait selfies is definitely it would not be surprising if that's their reason. Like, yeah, we have a huge notch, but it's okay because we've got really, really good portrait selfies. Like maybe, I don't know, maybe, you know how like portrait selfies have been a topic of conversation for the last few years where, you know, some phones like will like have little strands of hair that don't make it through the blurring filter or whatever, and other phones will be better. Like that's been like a point of comparison with a lot of phones, I feel like. So what if, I mean, I could see maybe the dual camera on the front being kind of like, you know, Google saying we have solved portrait selfies. Like these are the best portrait selfies you've ever seen in your life. I don't know. The camera has been such a big marketing message for the Pixel. And so I wouldn't be surprised if that's the route they go. What do you think?
I hope there's a depth sensor, which is a bit of an aside. Yeah. Let me do something cool with like depth sensing, not just for the facial, but like AR emoji are cool from a technological standpoint. AR avatars.
Yeah. I could definitely see that.
Augmented reality.
Yeah.
AR core maybe. So who knows?
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah.
I think that pretty much rounds out Pixel 3. Oh, I guess another thing we can speculate about is when do we think this thing's going to launch? We don't really have any solid evidence that it's going to be another October 4. I guess
we had that one piece of evidence for October 4th this year.
Maybe I'm forgetting. What was it?
Oh, the YouTube thing, Famebit. YouTube owns.
That's right. Yeah, that was like last week or earlier this week. I can't remember.
Oh yeah, this week. It's this weekend. But it's at October 4th, a Canadian launch.
That's right. That's right.
At this,
however,
point, yes.
I was gonna say, I think. So I don't know if anyone's been following this whole Pixel 3 leak situation, but apparently, the guy who leaked it bought this Pixel 3 XL from some Ukrainian phone seller. It's called like Bin Shop or something, on Telegram or something. And the guy's trying to sell Pixel 3 XLs for $2,000. And apparently if he's selling them for $2,000, like he's probably got a lot of them. he's not advertising this to only sell one. So, I mean, I don't think we have any real proof that he actually has them, but he obviously sold one of them, and if he sold one of them, I don't see why he might not have 20 of them. Or it could all be a scam and he's just trying to take advantage of the publicity to get people's money. But
it's wild. What is happening? It's hard to emphasize how this is a massive security implication for Google.
Yeah.
Either they lost one of the devices
Or a whole truck of them.
But and the fact that it's still functioning, for whatever reason.
It's connected to Wi-Fi, too.
Yeah, it's
The IMEI is visible in the video.
Yeah.
So it's like,
it's crazy.
Serial number two, but yeah, it's insane. I think you're right. It's absolutely unprecedented for, you know, I guess other Android makers have had similar things happen to them.
Sure.
Yeah, it's crazy. I guess I was just saying how widely it's leaked. So the first leak started appearing 2 or 3 months ago at this point.
Yeah.
You know, it's like completely leaked, and it leaked really early, especially compared to the Pixel 1 and 2. And yeah. So, I mean, maybe this is a Foxconn thing. I mean, that's the one big variable that changed, is that Google started manufacturing these with Foxconn. And so, and yeah. I'm sure Google does not have the same kinds of like leverage on, in terms of like controlling aspects of the security and stuff. You know, like Apple is like Foxconn's biggest contract. So like, I think Apple has a lot of say and a lot of input on what happens at Foxconn, and like, you know, keeps everything under. I think I've heard that like Apple has so many employees, like actual corporate employees that live and work at Foxconn just to manage the whole security situation. I'm guessing since Google's an infinitely smaller player, they may not have the resources or the leverage to do something like that. They're probably treated like any other manufacturer or any other contract that Foxconn has for manufacturing phones. So, you know, it's typical to see these kinds of crazy leaks with some of the Chinese OEMs. You know, I like Lenovo and Motorola, for instance, lately. I think the Moto Z3 leaked like some like crazy like 7 months earlier than it launched or something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you know, we have examples, but with Google, it's definitely unprecedented. And I guess what I'm saying is that it's either that, you know, the Foxconn being in the picture has just made Google really leaky this year, or I guess the theoretical is that potentially the launch date could be sooner. If we've seen it all leak out this quickly.
Yeah.
And there's another, the other thing is we've had reliable reports, or supposedly reliable reports, of a Pixel launching in India this summer.
And it's counting August, days that.
It's August 10th now. And so I think it was supposed to, like, I think the, one of the reports out of India said that it was going to happen in June or something. So,
yeah,
that's another factor that plays into all this. So
I would love an early launch personally, and I think for Google it helps them beat the next iPhone cycle. So
yeah, I guess you could look at that two ways. You could look at it like people see the iPhone cycle and then they get the Pixel because they weren't impressed with the iPhone, or they could launch the phone in August, September, and then see the phone, or and then think in their mind like, I'm gonna wait and see what the iPhone or see what the iPhone looks like before I buy a Pixel, and then that might be risking potential sales. I'm sure they have data that shows which of those two approaches is better, but. Yeah, and I guess the final thing on Pixel is, we talked about this a lot, but like, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see if Pixel can really pick up steam, because they only sold 4 million units in 2017, and I'm sure 2018 with all the stuff that happened with Pixel 2 XL, I'm pretty sure 2018 has not been a stellar year for sales either. Although, should be growing. We'll see. We'll hopefully get more data on that soon, but I'm like, I don't know. I have mixed feelings about my optimism for the long-term success of the Pixel line. The numbers are not exactly stellar, but the phones are stellar. So I don't know.
Yes,
we'll see how that goes.
I'm sure Google is in for the long game.
Right. And the dent that they need to make is a dent in Samsung's share. And speaking of Samsung, yesterday was the Samsung Impact event in New York City. Our Ben Schoen was there, and Samsung announced the Galaxy Note 9, which is the all-you-can-eat buffet of smartphones. A very expensive all-you-can-eat buffet.
Expensive. All the specs are there. It's big. It's huge. It's big battery. It's... I would I think it's fair saying it's a zero compromise device from the hard, from a pure hardware standpoint.
Yes. Yeah, on a hardware standpoint, yes. I think the compromise is that the Samsung software. But yeah, it's interesting to me to see how the Pixel is kind of, the Pixel 3 XL is kind of like the antithesis in the Android space. It's like they're both $1,000 phones, but they have like almost exactly opposite approaches in terms of, you know, features and specs and stuff. Like the Pixel is like super conservative on specs and like, you know, on design and stuff. It's like never super flashy. You know, they're not, I mean, as far as we know so far, they're not doing something crazy, like, you know, having a stylus or anything. And, so like, you know, like, as you mentioned earlier, the Pixel 3 XL is going to have 4 gigs of RAM, you know, not an, a huge battery. It seems like the bigger Pixel. Yeah. It's like taking on kind of the iPhone, you know, like customer. And then the Note 9, which we saw announced yesterday, is kind of like the, like all of their advertisements, Samsung's, all of their advertisements are pretty much all just like, look what we can do that the iPhone can't do, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all touting like, we have an SD card, you know, micro SD card, and we have an the S Pen, which now has Bluetooth, and we have, you know, you can, you know, they tout it on stage. You can have a terabyte of storage, which who needs a terabyte of storage on their phone? Like, I don't really... It doesn't really appeal to me, like all the
pure hardware, the specs game
doesn't appeal to me. But I guess the more interesting thing to me yesterday was the Galaxy Watch.
Yes.
Did you have any thoughts on that?
So there are two models. The smallest is 42 and the largest is 46. Crazy battery life. 4 days touted on the small one, I think. Up to 6 on the bigger one. It's interesting in the contrast it serves to Wear OS, of course. The Fossil launched new devices, their Gen 3, which is still using a 2-year-old Qualcomm Snapdragon chip, and that's like 24 hours of battery life. So the Google is losing the pure hardware game until this new chipsets, and depending on who you ask, they might be using the software game compared to Wear OS and Tizen.
Yeah,
I guess the Galaxy Watch never panned out with Android, with Wear OS, of course. So,
yeah, that was the big rumor, and I don't know if it's a disappointment or if it's a good thing. but yeah, the Galaxy Watch. The big, I guess, standalone or standout feature to me. I mean, I feel like the Gear S3, the Gear Sport, and this watch are kind of like to the untrained eye would be almost indistinguishable.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess there's nothing exactly, you know, interesting about it from a perspective, like a hardware design perspective, because I don't know, like, if it seems like they've kind of mastered the smartwatch design thing, like you know, it's a circular display, you know, not a huge watch, which we can talk about that, but you know, the rotary control system is just excellent, and having a couple of buttons on the side is also, you know, pretty useful for a lot of different use cases. But the battery life, the 6-day battery life, is like you mentioned, it's like it sets it apart so much from everything else. I mean,
even the Apple Watch, you can get like 2 days, 3 days, maybe 2 days comfortably, 3 days if you stretch it. But it's good on Samsung.
Yeah,
good.
I mean, I think it's got to be a Tizen optimization thing too, because you can only fit so much battery in that size device, you know. Whereas the TicWatch Pro is like the exact same size. It's probably maybe even bigger. I don't know, but it just so it goes to show how unoptimized Wear OS is compared to Tizen, because for TicWatch to get their watch up to, you know, even a few days of battery life, I don't even think that they're touting 6. I think it's like they're touting like 3 or 4 or something. I can't remember. Let's see. Okay, yeah, so they only claim 2 days when using the smart mode. And then essential mode, which is only the, you know, It's only
displays like step counts and whatever.
It doesn't show accuracy. In that mode, they say 30 days. But in the smart mode, where you can actually use it as a smartwatch, they're only claiming 2 days. And they had to make serious hardware modifications to get Wear OS to get 2 days on that device. And it's like physically like the same size. So it's got to be a testament to optimization of Tizen, I guess. I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah.
I think we might be in for, well, Wear OS is off in the distance. Qualcomm announced an event September 10th, I believe, for new chips.
Yeah, so, well,
I think,
yeah, we don't really know what that is. All we have is a little teaser image, and it's an image of, you know, like a Zoom, like a generic watch, and a little complication that says, you know, SF or something like San Francisco. And it says September 10th. And so we don't really know. It doesn't, like, I got the email from Qualcomm. I asked for it myself. I think Mr. Mobile, Michael Fisher was the first person to post it, but they sent it to me. I wanted to make sure that the email didn't say anything about, you know, an actual event. And they told me, yeah, no comment. We don't have any more information other than what you see in this image. So we don't really know if it's actually a physical event, which mysterious. To me, a physical event for a system on a chip is a little bit weird, unless they're planning to bring in partners.
Google would want the limelight on this. They're not going to announce at a Qualcomm event.
Almost certainly not. I don't expect that event to be very exciting if it is even a physical event. It might just be a press release and this is just a teaser. I guess a couple other things from the Samsung event. We had Fortnite for Android, which we reported would be 30 days exclusive, and like five different people and sites. Like, I think one of the guys at Droid Life said, yep, 30 days. XDA also heard 30 days. So I think something changed between when we reported that and the launch, because it turned out that it was only a 3-day exclusive. A funny thought came to my mind was maybe Epic Games told Samsung, maybe it was in the contract, like, if this leaks, you get, or if it doesn't leak, you get 30 days. And if it leaks, you get 3 days.
Yeah. That's amazing. That's very funny.
Sorry for ruining it for you, Samsung. Yeah, so Fortnite for Android, there's a hands-on. We did hands-on with it. Night of Google, it's obviously super anticipated. I'm not really into it personally, but that's what that is. And then, Samsung's taking on the Google Home with the Galaxy Home, which looks like cow udders to me.
That's good. Oh, that's a good one.
It's the second thing I've seen this week that looks like cow udders. The other thing was this new painting nozzle that Tesla's using to paint their cars. You can look that up on Tesla's Twitter page, but they have like a new nozzle or something that they're using to automate painting the Model 3. And it looked like all the comments on Twitter are like, LOL, it looks like a cow udder. So that looked like a cow udder to me. And then the Galaxy Home also kind of looks like udders to me. It looks Bixby. Ugly to me. I don't know. Yeah. Bixby. It's like my favorite take on the whole Bixby thing at the event was during the event, David tweeted, look, Bixby can look up, or Bixby can look up restaurants or something, like welcome to 2018,
2011.
Or yeah, 2011. I thought that was so funny. Yeah. Like they were actually demoing on stage how Bixby could look up restaurants. And
how many years before they kill it, honestly?
I don't know. How many years before
they made a hardware big investment? Yeah, they're going to keep fudging with it, sadly, for the unfortunately. Yeah.
Yeah, we got confirmation that YouTube Music will get bi-weekly updates. So that's something that was
Magic Leap happened.
Oh yeah, Magic Leap. Forgot about Magic Leap, and that is notable that I forgot about it because that's how exciting it was.
So Magic Leap is this 5-year-old startup, if you can call a company with $2.3 billion a startup.
that
Google backed. That's the relevance. The relevance is that it's Google backed. that's
backed by everybody.
Yeah,
it is backed. There's backed. So much money there, yeah. And they released their first product. It's called the Magic Reap One Creator Edition. It's a, for all intents and purposes, a dev kit for the moment. And in terms of the technological leap that they were promising for like 5 years, it's not that. It's a HoloLens, basically, with a better field of view.
Not much better.
Not much better. I've seen like a sparing amount of reports that it might, that I think it was the Wall Street Journal said something about how it's hard to, it's in the absolute perfect conditions, it's hard to distinguish between real objects and virtual objects. So, but like, again, like perfect conditions in a lab, in a demoed condition, I assume. But yeah, it's $2,300. It's available in 6 cities because they have to hand deliver it to you, which is, it's a bit of a glass-like nature to it. You have to go to a certain place. I think you put it best on Twitter. It's a promising technology. Augmented reality is the future, and everybody's moving to that. But we're not there yet. The technology isn't caught up yet. And we're still waiting. We're going to be here for the long haul.
Yeah, I'm disappointed. I think the main reason I'm disappointed is that it basically turns out that all of that marketing stuff on YouTube for the last like 4 years has all been just fake, basically. I mean, maybe not fake, like, you know, it very well may have been generated through Magic Leap Tech. I think it was. I don't think they're lying about that, but the problem I have with it is that it doesn't represent what actually using the tech is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, actually having the headset on your head is not anything like what the YouTube videos tried to make you think it would look like. But, you know, some reviews I read, like The Verge, they mentioned like that some of those things that you see in those videos are actually what you do see in the headset. Like, it's actually real. Like, it's real. That's actually what you do see. But with, like, what is it, 50-degree field of view, 60-degree?
Yeah.
Obviously it's like HoloLens. So it's like, it's not immersive. It's not, and I guess it's not immersive yet. I mean, it's kind of like, I was expecting Magic Leap to be, even if it was something twice the size that it is, like even if it was like
twice the price,
even if it was like $5,000 and like a full blown helmet or something, like an astronaut's helmet that you had to put on your whole head. I don't know. Yeah. I don't care.
But even if you can get technology there, if they had the technology to back it up.
Right. The problem is that they had to release a product. You know, they've had, you know, millions and millions of dollars invested, and eventually the pressure mounts, you know?
Yeah.
And so they had to release something, and the something they ended up releasing is barely better version of HoloLens. And so it just turns out that a lot of the dream that they pitched is not exactly real yet.
The YouTube video I was referring to was the one about students in the gymnasium, the whale.
Oh yeah,
that was a concept. That was 100% a concept, and
yeah,
they showed that for a few years, and later on they started showing that like smaller demos that were probably shot on an actual Magic Leap, but a grandiose vision isn't here yet, and I don't think it'll be here for quite a while.
Yep. Okay, so guys, to round out the show, we're kind of running out of time. We have some app updates this week. Anything interesting happened today in particular? We haven't seen Google App yet.
No, so Google Contacts and the Google Phone app, both are in the process of rolling out a material theme redesign. It's white. It's all white. They're getting rid of like blue app bars. It's basically white. It's Sans.
It's basically white.
It's Google Sans. It's bolded icons. That's about it. But hey, who, I like consistency, and I'm sure many people do. So
that could be the slogan for the material theme. Google material theme. It's basically white.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look at the Pixel 3 XL. That's sweet. It's all white.
Yeah, I wonder what they're going to call it.
Clearly oh, yeah. White. That's yeah. Very white.
I thought Google Clock adding Spotify for custom alarms was really cool.
Yeah, that's... Again, I'd like to note that YouTube Music didn't come first, the YouTube Music, but okay. I guess the YouTube team is still a bit busy adding other features, but understandable. But a Google spokesperson has confirmed to us that YouTube Music integration is coming to Google Clock sometime in the future. So that's a very good sign.
Yeah, and then YouTube for Android's dark theme is widely rolled out. Yeah, still in the process of rolling it out. And then we have YouTube's desktop player now supports vertical videos.
Yeah, so this is actually... so on the web, if you're watching a vertical... Oh, sorry, if you're in the app, if you're watching a vertical video, you have a special vertical interface. It's not black bars. And now this adaptive player is coming to the web version. And it's nice.
Yeah.
Consistent.
I guess for one final little note, Google announced kind of quietly last week that the Google Chrome browser is now available in Daydream. So Daydream, for those who don't remember it, which I wouldn't blame you if you don't, the platform debuted before, or Google I.O. before the Pixel event, the original Pixel event, I believe. And then the Daydream View headset, which was the first hardware that actually supported or was built for Daydream. That came out alongside the original Pixel in 2016.
Yeah.
And for this entire time, so almost 2 years now, Daydream has not had a browser, which... I mean, I guess it's kind of understandable since, I mean, it's kind of one of those things. It's like, it's kind of like having a browser on a smartwatch. It's it's kind of like not practical and probably people's like first feature request. but Google Chrome is now on Daydream VR and I have not tried it yet because I have not dug my Daydream View out of the closet. So maybe I'll get back to you all on that next week.
Yeah.
Yep. I guess, yeah, until then, you can tune into Alphabet Scoop here every week. We record this podcast every Friday and publish on all of your favorite podcasting platforms every Saturday morning. You can find us on all those platforms, including iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, Google Play Music, hopefully soon to be YouTube Music. We're not sure on that one. And you can even listen on our site at 9to5google.com. Thanks for tuning in, as always, and thanks to Abner for joining me. We'll see you next week.
Bye.